This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 334 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from Brisbane, Steve Peters. How are you?
Good, thanks, Bruce.
Thank you for joining us again.
Oh, not too bad. In fact, believe it or not, we might even have a touch of winter here.
Oh, really? Is it getting a bit chilly up there, is it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I think it's going to go down to 13 tonight. Still 27 in the day, but it has been topping 30 and 20.
Yeah, right.
A lot of people.
I've got to say, I can't speak for Melbourne. I haven't looked at the Melbourne weather, but generally, Sydney and, you know, this part of the world, it's been a very mild autumn so far.
And I think we've suffered. Well, when I say suffered, we have, and someone's actually put on Facebook tonight up here in Queensland, said we should all have a minute of silence for the fact that we might actually have a winter finally.
Right.
So that's, yeah, it's interesting.
It does seem fairly late in the year to be getting to now only just starting to get cool.
Correct.
It seems so. Like it's, yeah, normally we're two or three weeks into some cold weather by now, but.
Well, yes, that's right. I mean, I suppose Easter was a bit early because normally you think of the people that go camping at Easter, it's either cold or it rains, you know.
Yeah, that's right. yeah, exactly. It's interesting, you know, because, you know, I did the Little Red Riding Hood shoot up at Mount Wilson. God, that must be a month ago now. And at the time, you know, and as I said on the podcast, I was there probably 2 weeks too early. What was interesting was that I noticed on Facebook today, somebody who posted some photos from my neck of the woods on the Central Coast, who took some photos out at Mangrove Mountain, which is just west of the Central Coast. It's probably a half-hour drive from where I'm at. And those photos were taken today or yesterday, and it is just rocking with reds and oranges and yellows, and oh, it just looked epic. So I think next year I'll, instead of making the ridiculously long hike to Mount Wilson, which is, you know, a three-hour drive from here, I'll organise a shoot for up at Mangrove Mountain instead.
So. Yeah, actually, there's a church that everyone seems to go to. It's in New South Wales, obviously, over from the border, but people from Queensland drive down. I think it might be on the way to Armidale or somewhere down that way.
Oh, okay.
And it's a quite a well-known church. So anyone who's a landscape photographer will know this church because people go there for the colours. But apparently I noticed someone put a photo up this week in one of the groups I'm in, and they said, oh, a lovely shot. And he said, yeah, he said, lucky I've got Photoshop. And I take it that there wasn't much colour there because it's been so warm that he actually did a bit of Photoshopping to get what he wanted.
Get the colour, so, yeah, right.
Interesting.
Yeah. And have you been active photographically over the last month or so?
Yes, I have, actually. Right. There was a model from England called Ivory Flame.
Okay.
Who I had a session with here at my house just doing some natural light and so on. And my wife was here and, you know, I showed my wife the photos. And basically, I was so happy with what I got because I suppose the first photo I took, the only thing I did in Lightroom was basically, I just took a spot. She had a Mozzie bite.
Yep.
But other than that, it was just straight out of camera and the light and the. As I said to my wife, I said, she's so beautiful. Obviously, the English rose skin, you know, she looks after herself. I said, she didn't have a piercing. She didn't have a tattoo. I said, and she knew as a model. And had that. And then just recently, I've had a group shoot with a group of us here where a fellow's got a house about 30 minutes away from me up in an area called Dabra, which is sort of on the way between where I am and you, if you keep going on this way, you sort of can head up to the Sunshine Coast, I suppose, what you'd call the back way.
Right. Okay.
And so we had a group of us and we did some art nude and he had a red bath in this house that was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and his house is actually painted black.
Whoa.
On the green landscape, and it's got this big veranda, and it's sort of, well, I wouldn't say it's A-frame, but it's got a high ceiling, and it's quite a nice sort of little place. And
sounds visually very interesting.
Yeah, we had a bit of fun, and it's some new models, which is always good, and we just had a generally fun day.
Cool. Nice. And where are those photos? Or are they not for publication?
Some of them are not. Well, some of them are not because of the fact that Facebook and places like that don't like those sorts of photos, unfortunately.
Yep.
Some will probably make their way to my website eventually, but I've been a bit lazy that way because there's a thing called the NBN. I don't know if you know about it. But
you're still waiting, are you?
I'm still waiting. And it's an interesting story because I think when I last spoke to you, I was so hopeful that I'd get it.
Yeah.
And I had a date, and they then told me that there was a network call shortfall.
Right.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
But basically, they went to the node or the post.
Yeah.
The post is actually down the end of my street, which is be 100 metres, and then from there, it's probably just over 100 metres to the node. So I'm actually quite close, so I'll be interested to see when I finally get it, which is supposed to be Friday.
Well, what is in your favour is the fact that we're on the eve of a federal election. So I would imagine that NBN rollout is going to get significantly ramped up over the next month or two.
One would hope so, but I've got the unfortunate thing of having Peter Dutton as my local member. Who I did send an email to, and he can't have NBN either because I've never got a reply. And I was quite polite, and I wasn't rude or anything like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. But yeah, so it's an interesting. Everyone I speak to when it comes to the NBN, they say, "Oh, it's a story." So it would appear, not a lot of people have an easy time of it.
No,
and I suppose as photographers, we're all. For my mind, I'm wanting the bandwidth I suppose the backup option that has been spoken about last week and I think the week before, we're all looking at ways, how can we best back up our images?
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the things that a lot of us are thinking of is the cloud, but you don't have the bandwidth and all that sort of stuff. So that's why I'm interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm on ADSL1, so, you know.
Oh, wow.
But then there are some people I've heard that have had ADSL2 and go to the NBN and they say that they don't see it any faster. So
really? Wow. It'd
be interesting. And that's because we're one of the first areas that are using the new, was it, the NBN to the node and then the copper from there to our
house. To the home, yep.
So we'll see what happens there anyway. So. Yeah.
I thought I was very fortunate in that, you know, the rollout to our place here in Gosford occurred before the change of government and before they stopped rolling out, you know, fibre to the home. So I got fibre all the way to the home. And from the moment we were joined up to the NBN, it was blisteringly fast and it was fantastic. But what I have noticed over the last 2 years is that, or probably even longer than that now, it has slowed down considerably. And I rang Optus and complained, and they basically said, yeah, look, we can see that it's an issue with the number of lines connecting to the DSLAM server in the exchange. It's got nothing to do with the node. It's further back up the food chain from there at the exchange. And until, I don't know if it's Optus or if it's Telstra who have to upgrade the DSLAM servers, but until that happens, there's nothing they can do to improve bandwidth in our area, allegedly.
Yeah. So. And that's, unfortunately, I think one of the things, in my opinion, the mistake in the way that Telstra has been sold off is my belief has always been that Telstra should have been a wholesaler.
Right.
Yep. And then everyone else a retailer. So Telstra was no longer the retailer, whereas you've got them as a retailer and the wholesaler.
Yep.
So, yeah, they've got a conflict there. And, of course, the problem they've got is that everyone wants to take all the capital city stuff and no one wants to do the bush or the country. And, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know when I used to live in Bundaberg, I can remember there's a part of Bernard Heads where if a pit fell in, it was cheaper to put around the orange gate around the pit than it was to replace the pit and things like that.
So what's a pit?
Well, you know where they have the pit where the cables are and so on?
Oh, okay.
Some of the underground ones?
Yep.
And that was easier to do that than it was to necessarily replace it and so on, because it was money they were spending on the network that was also benefiting their competitors. And that's the whole issue, I think, is that with the thing. And I don't know whether NBN's going to be any better or whether they've learnt any lessons. I don't know. Time will tell, I suppose.
Yeah. Apologies for the international listeners. Yeah. So what do we have on our list of things to discuss this week, Steve?
I don't know if we've got a lot to at all, but I think there's probably we might start, I suppose, because there's a theme. There is a theme,
definitely.
And I think the theme, obviously, is I found an article which sort of wraps up the article.
We'll leave that till the end.
Leave that to the end?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I was quite intrigued with Adam put this one up about the Canon
macro
lens with a light ring in it. And I'm actually quite excited by this. And to be honest, my gas has been very tempered for some time.
Oh, okay. And this has caused it to flare up a little bit?
Yes, it has a little bit. Although I must admit, foray into the Olympus OMD world.
Oh, yeah.
Got me quite excited.
Right.
Just with, you know, I bought a kit that come with three lenses, and I took, through work, we went and saw an AFL match. I think it was the Sydney Swans versus, that's right, it was the Sydney Swans versus Brisbane.
Right.
Lions. And I took my OMD in because I knew that it would sneak in better than a Canon with a white lens.
Right, yep.
And because I've got a 40 to 150, which is on the OMD 4/3 micro or whatever, was actually 80 to 300.
Right, nice.
And I was pretty impressed with what I got, and especially when I was able to pick out my boss sitting in the very exclusive part and take a photo, blow it up. And like on my phone, I was able to then sync it to my phone and then text it to him and basically say, I've got you.
Nice.
So there's some features there. Although having said that, I have read recently an article where someone poo-pooed the idea of the mirrorless, and they were using the Sony and the lenses and saying that anyone that talks about losing weight and size, and they showed some photos that you weren't actually gaining a lot. Yeah.
The lenses designed for mirrorless cameras tended to be longer in the body anyway.
Correct, yes. Yeah. So it's an interesting, you would have seen that article too. I thought it was an interesting thing. But certainly getting back to the Canon, you know, this lens, and it's an STM, so it's a stepping motor.
Yep.
Which,
explain to me what a stepping motor is.
Well, I think from my understanding, right, it's one of the lenses you can use with the stepping motor. For a start, it's quiet.
Right.
And secondly, it continuously focuses if you are videoing.
Oh, okay.
Because one of the things you know is if with video and the DSLRs,
you normally have to manually focus, don't you?
Correct.
Yeah, right.
I stand to be corrected on this, but my understanding is you don't stand the hassle of having to focus the lens as you pan around and so on.
Right. But this is a prime lens. It's not a zoom lens. So that would suggest that the stepping motor is just for the focus.
The focus.
Not doing any focal length adjustment.
You're not having to focus, because obviously if you think of a video, if you've had someone standing in front of you and then the lens would focus on that, and then if you were to pan past them and so on, the background would be blurry, and if you wanted to bring that in, you have to focus. So, it focuses.
Yeah, right. So just for those who haven't yet checked out the link, this is the Canon EFM 28mm. And what makes this so interesting is it's a macro lens and will be the first to market, assuming that, you know, no one beats them to the punch, with an LED light ring built into the front of the lens. So it's, you know, designed obviously for macro work, and you'll have this beautiful white light source emanating from, you know, all angles around the lens of whatever you've, you know, zoomed in or not zoomed in on, but, you know, got close up to. You'll have this beautiful circular LED light to illuminate your subject, which is pretty funky. Kind of makes you wonder why this hasn't happened sooner.
Well, I think you only have to look at, I presume it's an LED light.
Yeah.
And I suppose you've got to think of the actual advances, and for a start, the LED technology.
Yep. But we've had LED lights for a long time. I'm just kind of surprised no one's thought to do this sooner.
Oh, there's been people want to sell you the accessories and so on that go around for some good money.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
But to actually build it in. Yeah. And I suppose, obviously, they're going to have to power it, and I presume.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of LED. Like, it doesn't draw a lot of current. So, yeah, it just, like I said, it makes me wonder, you know, why did it take this long before someone did this? You know, it seems so obvious when you hear it, you know.
Well, I suppose that's like everything. And the write-up, I thought, was interesting. They said, well, it looks plastic. Yeah, they say the build quality is of, you know, high-grade plastic, which I suppose the scientists suggest that in the sphere of, I suppose, lenses, if you think of the Nifty 50 lens, which is around, I think, $130 or something. So the thoughts are that this lens might actually be relatively cheap.
Yep.
Or I shouldn't use the word cheap, but I suppose the cost of it might not be inexpensive to something if it was a better quality as such as far as the build goes. So it's exciting, I think, to think
It is very exciting. And, you know, for the macro-loving crowd, that's, you know, one less accessory you've got to carry with you.
And, look, I must admit, macro is probably one area that I haven't really dabbled in.
Right, same.
And I think it's one of those things you are – maybe it's because – I'm not patient enough or something, I don't know. but, you know, I think one of the links you would have seen that I put up there is some macro work.
Which, I was going to say we should cover that story next. So
this, and it's a bit like in Glenn's thing, you know, I hate it because it's just such great work. And I noticed someone in the comments of the particular link said, well, I don't know whether all that's necessarily macro, but... Oh, it's pretty damn close, and I think it's some fantastic work.
Well, here's the thing. This is from Kim Lewenberger Photography on SmugMug. The thing what were you talking about?
Oh, sorry. There's a one I put up.
The 500px story.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah, sorry. Let's talk about the 500px story first, and then we'll come back to...
Yeah, we'll come back to...
Sorry, I forgot that there were two stories that were about macro photography. Yeah, so this is interesting. This was the top 20 macro photos on 500px so far this year. And yes, some of them sort of border on a little bit of... post-processing overkill and probably a little bit of photo manipulation, but some of them are awesome. I love the ants with their larvae.
Oh,
that is just amazing.
Yeah, and I think is there also the one there with the was it the fly or something?
Oh, the one the fly flying over the surface of the water straight towards the camera. That's phenomenal. Like, how the hell do you get focus on something like that? That is just crazy.
I dare say that was a fly. I dare say this is where the patience bit comes in. So, and maybe that's where I'm not. And obviously, you've got to get down low and crouch. And maybe this is, you know, I'm showing my age here a bit that, you know, I find that sort of stuff a bit difficult. But look, I think a lot of it is. But you're right. The ants one is just fantastic. To do it, and so on, and I suppose the water drops with the ladybirds and so on are just, you know, and you could see that a lens like that new Canon lens would certainly make things easier for you.
Oh, definitely, definitely. It would certainly even out your light, you know, distribution on your subject. Because I think that's one of the hardest things with macro photography is just getting even distribution of light.
Oh, yeah, and, you'll see a lot of people go into the field with, you know, bits of paper and I was going to say bulldog clips, but that sort of thing to form like a light box and sort of stuff out and attach it to a twig or some sticks. And, you know, like I said, I think there's a bit of patience involved.
For sure.
Outside of my...
So just to now jump back to the Kim Leuenberger post.
I actually got this from I subscribe to digital photography from the UK on my iPad.
Oh, okay.
And it has a section there what people are doing. And the thing about this was this particular fellow actually has autism.
Oh, right.
And
well, what I was going to say was the thing that I love about these images is that they're not done with a lens baby. Everyone seems to have gone on this lens baby kick of making life-size scenes look like they're macro. And I personally, I just hate it. I don't know why, but I just do.
Yeah, no, I understand. Or they take it into Photoshop and then they do the tilt shift.
And it's so fake because you can see that the blur is just in a straight line, but it doesn't move around physical objects like it should if it was actually photographed with a tilt shift lens. You know what I mean? It always looks dodgy as.
Yeah, I just pulled up the June 2016 Digital SLR Photography Magazine.
Yeah.
And they talk here with this fellow.
Yeah.
And he said there was a weekend on Instagram where we took photographs to raise awareness for autism.
All right.
I received a camera for my birthday a few weeks before, so I took my props from my bedroom to shoot, and one of them was a toy car. I posted the images on Instagram and got a lot of attention, so I started taking the car everywhere. I was traveling quite a bit at the time, so I had plenty of interest.
Nice.
So that's sort of where it came from. Now, do they have...
Looks to me like he's actually got a range of different model cars that he's used.
Yes. And it's just, as you say, they could quite... You know, I suppose this is where, you know, getting the detail. He says that he was using a 5D with a 50mm 1.4 lens.
Nice.
So, yeah, good lens.
Yep.
He says, when I shoot in London, no one looks twice if you're laying on the floor shooting a toy car in the street.
Yeah, no, they're great. I really like the series. It's fantastic.
I do too, and it's I like it when someone does something different and does it well. You know, some people do this, but this is probably one of the best series I've ever seen with this sort of...
And there's even one image right towards the end where the combi is actually underwater.
Yeah.
And he's obviously had either an underwater housing or a waterproof camera, which is great. You know, all the rest are obviously above the waterline, but that one's under it. So it's good. I really enjoyed those images.
Yes.
All right. So
can I just the Pass the Camera project?
Yep.
I noticed you asked where that's up to.
Yep.
And I must admit, I'm wondering, where is that? But I do notice that someone had posted something there that I think probably by mistake to the wrong page by George.
Oh, that was George. That's right. Yeah. He did post something there today, and I think he probably intended that to be for Shutters Inc.
But I thought it was an interesting story because it was getting the camera that is how it makes you feel.
Right.
And it turns out this person was asked, you know, what camera should I get?
Yep.
And they sort of, you know, started off with their normal, you know, what do you want to do? What's your budget and all that? And then on they go with sort of their journey. And then they say, well, I like one. And I ended up with the Leica.
Right.
But I did have the Fuji at one stage. But, yeah, sort of... And I must admit, I know we talked about Leica last. You talked last week a bit about Leica, and I honestly can't see the like I can't see the dollars, but I don't own one, so that's probably why.
Yeah.
It's like a Hasselblad. I can remember going on a workshop and this bloke had this like doctor's bag and he pulls out a Hasselblad.
Yeah, right.
Said he was just, you know, a hobbyist, and I thought, yeah, right.
Oh, well, I mean, if you're a hobbyist but you've got, you know, an unlimited source of income, then, you know, maybe, you know, you can go for that kind of thing. So, and it can still be a hobby. So, that's an interesting one. But yeah, definitely, you know, find the camera that feels right in your hands. That definitely should trump everything else in terms of, you know, technical specs and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, the market is saturated with great cameras. No matter what brand you have an allegiance for, or even if you don't have brand allegiance.
You're right. If you try, it's, to my mind, you start reading up. And one thing I learnt when I first started into, you know, getting back into digital and all that, was there wasn't a bad review.
Right. Right?
They're all fabulous. Which makes it very hard. And I must admit, at the time I went Canon because there are other people at work who had Canon. And we could swap lenses and accessories and so on. That was my sole reason, and I would probably say to people like, and that's often what I say, well, what have your friends got? If you're in, you know, have they got whatever? Because then there is that ability to share some gear if you need to, or borrow something.
Or like even just ask questions for, you know, hey, how does this function work on my camera?
It's like the PlayStation Xbox, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Your friends got, so you can swap games and so on. It's a similar thing. And certainly I do tell, especially, and no disrespect to the women, and the fact that their hands normally are smaller, so how the camera feels in their hands is important.
Definitely. And I think, you know, like I said, the market is so saturated now that it doesn't matter what style of camera you want. You know, whether you want the small, you know, mirrorless setup, whether you want something with interchangeable lenses, or you want something that's got a fixed lens built into it, or whether you want, you know, the great honking DSLR, there are multiple great cameras in every sector of that product lineup, you know. So it's not like, oh, if I want this particular style of shooting, I've only got one or two options, because that's not the case. There are so many to choose from. So there's no reason to pick a camera that doesn't feel great.
No, and the thing is, in a lot of cases, if you put a photo up, and this is one of the things I say to people who, and I suppose it's Glenn and so on that has introduced me to the Tamron lenses.
Right.
Yeah, and no one says, oh, Steve, you shot that with a Tamron lens. You didn't use a Canon lens. You know, like, and it's like I've put photos up out of the OMD. I haven't told anyone I've got that camera, partly because if I did, my wife would know I've got it. That's another story.
Right.
But basically, yeah, no one's said that. They've seen the photo go up and they probably think, oh, yeah, there's Steve, put his photos up, whatever the case may be. And it's, I think, in a lot of cases, I've met what I call gear snobs, who very much on the gear, and at the end of the day, there's the old saying that the best camera that you've got is the one with you at the time. And I mean, I can remember going to Nepal and my friend, you know, had a Canon, same as me. We had our 7Ds and 5D. I think he had a 6D. I had a 5D Mark III and so on. We're up there, and then he pulls his phone out, a Samsung, and he took a photo. And I can remember this other fellow did the same. He had a Samsung as well. They took these photos.
Yeah.
And the software within the phone and whatever, the photo was like, he said, look at that. You think to yourself, well, what did I bother carrying all this stuff for? And I suppose that's, at the end of the day, are the photos good enough? Yes. Could you blow them up? Well, you may have a problem going above a certain size. But, you know,
But for 90% of the time, they're going to be adequate.
But I do believe that if you're a photographer and you're used to holding a camera and whatever, I've got this idea that at times your composition with the phone or whatever, you know, is where sometimes it's the stuff that you learn and what you can do and stuff like that, I think, that does assist you, no doubt. You know, that's just my feeling.
Yeah.
So yes, it is amazing, I suppose, that we do have a lot of gear snobs, and you know, people sort of will poo-hoo what you've got and whatever. Yet if you keep quiet and don't say anything, you know, people don't.
That's it. And the gear snobs will be the first ones to point you to, you know, the DxO website with all the, you know, all the figures down to the tenth decimal place of how this lens is better than that lens. It's like, well, really, your average viewer who's going to view the photo couldn't care less.
And, you know, what are they looking at it on? Are they looking at it on their phone?
Exactly.
They're looking at it on the iPad?
Exactly.
Looking at it on the computer? How's good their resolution? What's their colour like? You know, there's a whole lot. I mean, it's, to my mind, and, you know, I can pick on you because you're in the sound area, but I personally,
yeah,
as far as sound, it's either loud or, if you can understand what I mean, like I can't distinguish between good sound, bad sound. Although I will say,
I think you could.
My nephew bought some Yamaha studio speakers.
Right. Yep.
Because he composes music and so on. He
right.
Plays cello, plays, you know, piano, whatever. And then he.
Do you know the model number of the speakers he bought?
No, but I do know that when he did play something through them, I did go, oh, that sounds great.
Right. Okay.
So for me to say, I wouldn't know if they sound good or not, I'd have to say, well, no, probably not. You know, I do know. They're definitely, I could immediately tell that the sound was great.
Okay.
So, yeah. And it's like you say, there's no one looks at, I mean, there'd be few people that would look at some image and go, oh, that was shot with a such and such lens. You know, I can see the chromic aberration, blah, 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 whatever. You know, there will be one or two people, but as you say, most people, no.
No, absolutely. So, anyway. So thank you for that story, George. We assume that you meant it to be included on Shutter Zinc, and it was just posted to the Pass the Camera project page in error, but that's
which
okay.
We haven't got an answer to either, Bruce, have we?
No, not yet. So it's possible that whoever's got it just hasn't seen the post yet, or it may be that the camera is in transit, so, you know, that's always possible.
And yes, and I have to admit that Australia Post service is, you're paying more, but you're getting less.
Right. Okay. We see, I don't even know if the camera's left the country yet or if it's still in Australia.
Well, so. It doesn't. I don't know where I am on the list, but where you said I was on the list, I think was wrong because I was panicking that it might have jumped me.
Right. Right. So you haven't received it yet?
I haven't seen it, no.
Right.
And I don't. You intended
okay.
to see it before.
So the last person I know who had it was Erin. So
yep.
I'll reach out to her and see whether she has sent it on yet. I know she had some stuff going on in her life. That
correct, she did. And I know David Kimry said, look, this is a year-long project. So, you know, good on you, David. You know, thanks for that, mate.
Yeah.
He's probably already had it, has he?
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, thanks.
So I'll reach out to her and find out. I'm sure she's probably sent the camera on by now. So we'll find out where it's at. But yeah. All right. So shall we get onto this series of stories that follows a common theme?
Just before we get onto that,
okay.
While we're talking sort of gear,
yeah.
In the magazine that I was reading on the train this morning and this afternoon, I came across the DxO1.
Right.
And I found out that it's actually been out nearly a year, I think.
Okay.
And I thought it was interesting because it connects. It's actually a camera in its own right, I find out.
Yeah.
So you can use it as a camera itself, or you can connect it to the iPhone and use the screen of the iPhone. And I'm just thinking to myself, why would you bother? I guess
it just comes down to that, you know, the people that want to have a great camera with them, but they don't want to carry bulk.
I suppose, and I must admit, I didn't actually try and find out how much the actual module sells for or anything, but I did then, I suppose, the one thing with it, of course, is it does come with it, you know, the memory card in it. So most phones, well, certainly Apple, you don't have that facility, whereas I think Samsung you do, where you can load the photos onto the card and so on. So, yeah, but I just thought, you know, this is a gadget for a gadget person. You know, you've seen, yeah, I could see Glenn wanting one of these somehow. He wouldn't know why, but he'd want it.
Right. I'm kind of thinking that maybe Glenn mentioned this on the podcast a while back.
But yeah.
I'm just on DP review at the moment, just trying to see if I can find the link to buy it, to see what. Here we go. The buy on Amazon.com between $402 and $462.
Okay, so you're probably looking $550 to $600
Australian.
Yep.
So it's interesting. It's a 1-inch sensor with a prime lens, which I think is. Oh, now.
Which is it? Did I say 1.8? I think I said, or is it 2.8? 1.8, I think.
I don't recall.
Is that in my link, actually?
32 mil focal length. There we go. 20 megapixel, 1-inch sensor. So, yeah, you can use it as a camera on its own, but it doesn't have a screen. That's the thing. That's the catch. So there's no screen built into it, so you don't get to view your images back unless you're using your iPhone.
No. It does have a screen.
Oh, does it?
On the back.
Oh, did I miss that?
It'd be that small that you'd need a set of field glasses to see it.
Right. Okay.
Because it's got a. I actually went to the link and they're using it standalone. So you can use it in standalone mode.
Yeah.
And it has a screen that they call the framing assistant.
Oh, okay.
So it's a screen with crosses and so on it.
Right.
You look at the photo.
So it's enough to help you with composition, and that's about it.
And I'd say the screen, by the look of it, would be lucky to be as big as your thumbnail.
So I stand by my previous allegation that it doesn't have a screen. But hey, you know, maximum shutter speed, 1/8000th of a second, f1.8 to f11, 32 mil focal range. Maximum ISO 12,800. That's not too bad. And a BSI CMOS sensor. So, you know, image stabilized sensor. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
that's a hell of a lot of tech to pack into something that small.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
108 grams. You wouldn't even feel that in your pocket.
No. probably a couple of 50 cents would bloody be heavier than that. Yeah.
No, very cool. And obviously, if you're an iPhone user and can then pair that thing up with your iPhone, then you get to use the Retina screen on your iPhone as your playback device, and yeah, you can use that as your framing assistant as well, if you like. So, yeah, very funky. You're not sold on the concept, though.
No, I think you could spend that sort of money on probably a pretty good compact camera to carry, to be honest.
Yeah. I guess, like I said, I can see people that want to.
But it's horses for courses. Obviously, they're working on the iPhone thing, I think, and that's what they're trying to.
Yeah, I can imagine people who are not photography enthusiasts who are going to travel, but want to be able to take some, you know, nice photos, thinking that that's a great, you know, sort of balancing act between not having to carry another gadget that has to be charged, although I'm assuming that one would have to be charged, but it's another gadget that you don't have to take with you, and you can just attach it to your iPhone and bam, you've got, you know, better photographic capabilities than you would have if you only had your iPhone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, each to their own.
True.
Yeah. All right.
Now, Do we get to the, I suppose, what you call...
The theme?
The theme?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Which, yeah, I could spoil it by going straight to that article, but I think what we'll do is we look at, you know, I suppose this, you know, person takes a selfie with a 126-year-old statue and breaks it to pieces. And
so this was in Portugal, I'm assuming, because it was a statue of the Portuguese king, Dom Sebastião, and this 24-year-old decided he'd climb on the pedestal of the statue to have, to take a selfie with the statue, and in the process knocks the statue off the pedestal and breaks it to pieces.
Yeah.
Yes, it was in Lisbon. Yeah.
Lisbon, yeah, you're reading, yeah. Yes. And I suppose, you know.
Not good.
Not good.
Not good.
This is, I suppose, the selfie craze, to be honest, is probably, well,
It needs to run its course and be done with.
It's not something that I'm keen on myself, amazingly. And in fact, I notice there's a bit of a craze, and I don't know whether I like it, where I see some of my photography friends like to take like a selfie with the model they've shot with.
Right.
Which to me is very Terry Richardson, and I just find it creepy and don't necessarily, yeah.
Yeah, it is a bit. I don't get the Terry Richardson reference, but I do think, yeah, it's a little bit creepy.
Well, Terry Richardson is, as you know, a fashion photographer.
No, I didn't know, but anyway.
Who takes, I suppose, very, what's the word, overexposes with the flash and whatever, and some people question.
So he goes high key?
Yeah, high key. He does a lot of stuff for Vogue and whatever, and right. He has a dubious reputation with the models.
Right.
You'll find there's a fair bit online about models accuse him of certain things.
Bit too touchy-feely?
Yes.
Right. But, okay.
Yeah, I'd leave you to go off and do your own little bit of research, but yeah.
Yeah, right. So that's the first story in the theme.
Yeah, and then we've got the one Adam put up that he put up about 10 minutes before I did or something, which was quite amazing, I thought.
So you will remember that about a month ago we had the story of a photographer who was doing the burning steel wool thing and set on fire an old wooden ship that was wrecked in a bay in California.
Yes.
So now comes the story of these guys who were trying to do the same thing, the spinning, burning wool at, what was this thing? It was a Munro. It was called Munro Station. I'm not sure what the building was, but this building was a 1920s, so, you know, a 100-year-old building. They were on the roof of it, I believe, doing the burning steel wool thing. And what do you know? The building catches fire. They can't put it out in time. They have to run for their lives, and the whole thing burns down.
Yeah. And, of course, they trespassed.
Yes. Exactly.
They trespassed. And I suppose it looks to me, when I look at the photos, that it was like it was called Munro Station, but it looks to me like it was like a bit
like
of a gas
service station, yeah.
Yeah, or something that people obviously stopped, and it was sort of almost like a place where they might have got some refreshments, fueled up the car, and things like that, and so on. But
so I think that
I don't know whether, I mean, I have public liability, and I'm not sure how you'd go if you were to attempt something like this, but it's probably a good example of why you have insurance and you do certain things if you're a photographer. But then the fact you've trespassed, and it brings me back, and I re-looked up the story tonight because we're going to talk about this, of the German tourist who was 18 and went to Egypt and climb the pyramids.
Oh, yeah.
I think you remember I mentioned it last time.
Yep.
And I was saying how he actually was let go. They caught him, and they were calling out to him, and he said, they were talking to me in Arabic, but he says, I just turned my music up and continued climbing.
Right.
Took photos when he got up there, and he's now banned. He was lucky he didn't get locked up, because the punishment is at least 4 years jail.
Wow.
And I don't think a jail in Egypt would necessarily be like the Ritz or anything. I wouldn't be one of my countries I'd necessarily
want to be imprisoned in.
No. So anyway, he's now, I find, he's got a life ban from Egypt, and some people might say, well, good, wouldn't want to back there anyway, but he's basically got a life ban. But I think I mentioned last time that the other thing that's going to happen is the next photographer that tries it will not be treated so lightly.
No, absolutely.
And I don't know even really. He's also taken photos of Times Square up on a building. It would appear he's one of these. I can remember there was a phase, and it still is a phase, where they did a thing where people call about base jumping.
Right.
Where they climb a building with a parachute and then jump off it.
Yeah.
And this is sort of this is like the next genre, I suppose, where you go to these places, you take a take a heap of photos and whatever of precarious things from, because everyone's trying to get a shot that no one else
has got. Yeah.
And then I just happened to come across a photographer that I follow in England, and it's from Peter Pixel, so you know, Adam will probably find it as well. But he's got an article that says photographers have become like pigeons.
Yeah.
And it just sums up for me.
Absolutely.
For me, what the whole thing is, and it's you know, it talks about the burned down building and all that, and it talks about the fact that it's just a small sampling in a long line of photographers who ruined it for the rest of our stories.
I'm trying to find, I can't see the line where he said.
Oh yeah,
where's the line?
I'll get to it because yeah. I think this is what he says, but you hold in your hands is a camera, a wonderful creation of metal and glass and plastic. It's not a license, however, to go wherever you please in the name of art, disobeying site rules as you push boundaries. Oh, I think that's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
They tell you you can't shoot at national monuments, so sneak in. You know, he's saying that some workshop teaching do this. We are a big industry and some of you are out there ruining it. We've got photographers setting up shop and taking over areas frequented by the public. We've got photographers trespassing on private land. Yep. We've got photographers who assume a camera entitles them to do as they please, wherever they please. And then this is the, he says, dear baby Jesus in a manger, excuse we've become like pigeons, annoying, showing up everywhere and crapping on everything. And I get it.
And look, only last week, David Marlin was telling us about the tourists at this rock cavity thing down on the south coast of Victoria who'd climbed over the barrier and walked out 20 metres to the edge and almost getting themselves washed into the sea, but ruining the shot for everyone else that wanted to take the photo because they were in the way.
Yes.
You know, and then, probably 2 months ago, we had a story of the Japanese farmer who had to chop a tree down to stop
And he comes to the end and he says, the camera should be the tool, not the photographer.
Exactly. Exactly. And it is a disturbing trend.
It is.
A very disturbing trend. Plus, there was the thing about the $75,000 worth of damage to the bus stations in Canada.
Oh, yes, with the broken glass.
Yeah, from a few weeks ago.
Or something.
Yeah, it's like, geez, really? But, yeah, so it certainly seems like it's time for all of us to take a collective breath and think long and hard about what the shot is that we're trying to get and what are the potential implications if it doesn't go the way we imagined it to go.
Yeah. Is it because we're trying to all outdo each other? Is this what it's
become? I think that's part of it. I definitely think that's part of it. I know that I'm a little bit like that. Not in the taking the risks part, but I do love to get a shot that I think no one else is getting. And I think we probably are all a little bit like that to a certain extent. But for me, it's more about I'd rather just go somewhere, you know, where most people just couldn't be bothered to go. Not somewhere illegal. I just mean like, you know, take me off into the middle of Australia or, you know, take me off into the middle of the jungle where most photographers won't bother to venture. To me, that's a greater adventure than, you know, climbing over a fence to get into somewhere I'm not meant to be.
But also, one of the things too is, you know, you read books and see things, but where they say, you know, you go to somewhere that's been photographed a lot, how do you make it different? Well, lie on the ground, you know, crouch down. I mean, you know, a kid takes a photo and they've got a completely different perspective. I mean, you know, Glenn's young daughter.
Yep.
I mean, she's taken some fantastic photos, and it's partly because she was at that right height, had a different aspect, you know.
Yep.
Just got in there and, you know, took the photo, and it's a similar thing that there are ways. And, of course, I mean, the other thing I read today, and it would appear in the UK, which I was a bit surprised, is there's a plane going into Heathrow that got hit by a drone.
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, yeah. and And apparently the drone makers were interviewed and they're saying that they're now putting in some sort of geo-blocking stuff into the drones so that you can't fly them near the airport.
Yeah, good.
Because they're trying to do this. But it would appear that the rules in the UK are not as stringent as what they are in Australia, although Australia is sort of we've now gone to the stage where we have relaxed them. But you've got to ask yourself, is that the next? I mean, I haven't bothered with a drone, to be honest. I mean, the idea is fantastic, but when you start, if you're responsible about it, you soon find, well, where am I going to be able to use this?
Yeah. Well, but I then think for people private that use, it's not too bad, but certainly if you're doing it as a commercial venture, then
You know,
you've got to get certification from CASA.
Although I think, and this is the thing with CASA now, have relaxed the rules if it's under 2 kilos. So that means that there were doing real estate who would have come a cropper who I was, this one person I particularly know that I don't like, I was thinking, oh, you're going to come a cropper, but then they changed the rules. So There are some, you know, they have made some slight changes and so on with that. But once again, I don't know, it's just the way society is. I mean, I live in an area where we've got some traffic lights where you have a red light to turn right. And at times you sit there and think, I could go through this. And I've seen people go through the red light.
Yep.
And because they say, oh, there's nothing coming the other way or whatever. But then I think, well, what's the lights there for a reason?
You know? Yeah. I feel the same frustration at times. You know, there are traffic lights like that around, you know, where I live, and you think, this really doesn't need to be a red arrow. You know, I could quite safely go now.
Yeah, but there are times that I know it's certain times of the day where it has to be there. And you know, my wife says to me, oh, being English, she says, oh, have part-time traffic lights. I said, oh, jeez. I said, we're hard enough using traffic lights that are on full-time, let alone if you're part-time ones. But I do wonder whether there could be some intelligence in the way that they're programmed or whatever. And I know it's, you know, there's different rules because you can get this on the same road, you can go down 300-400 meters. There's another set of lights where the arrow will be either, I think, red for initially and then it'll turn to green.
Yeah, right.
But then it's also got a, you know, left turning light. Yeah, there's all sorts of things that go into it that they've obviously, better people than me know why. But yeah, it's almost like everyone says, well, the rules don't apply to me. And that seems to be what we've got at the moment, and it's with this stuff. Well, I'm a photographer, I can trespass, I can go here. I'm just, oh, what am I doing? I'm only taking photos. Interesting.
Yeah, and that's all well and good as long as it all goes to plan the way you imagine it in your mind. But as we have seen, it so often doesn't. And that's the problem. And that's why I say, you know, we all collectively need to take a breath and think, okay, I've got this great idea. I know that I'm going to push, you know, some boundaries or some rules a little bit in order to execute this. And if it comes off great and it's going to look like blah because I can see it in my head, but we need to stop and go, what if it doesn't work? What could potentially go wrong here? And who am I going to inconvenience by having done this? Am I going to be the only person that's on the you know, the sharp end of the pineapple, or is it going to seriously impact other people as well?
I think it's interesting on the Peter Pixel article on this, you know, the pigeon thing, stop being pigeons, is reading through some of the comments.
Right.
And then they're saying, you know, someone's here saying stop giving the rule breakers publicity when they defy those rules and end up producing something that wasn't otherwise allowed. The end justifies the means to them as long as they know that the result of their rule breaking will get them noticed.
Yeah, good
and
point.
Then, you know, then someone else has said, well, let's just say I didn't get shots like these by following those no trespassing signs. As artists, we're always concerned with which rules to break and which to follow when we're making art.
Yep.
And the same discretion must be used in these circumstances. If you always stay within the boundaries, you're not an artist. However, being a respectful artist is knowing when and what rules should be broken. Clear the actions of the photographers, which were outlined in this article, are not rule-breaking for art's sake, but are instead just extremely poor judgment and, quite frankly, disrespectful. Someone's replied to that and said, Curtis, congratulations, you're part of the problem, not the solution. And, it's interesting, I suppose, the views of people saying, well, I'm an artist, I want to do something different. So, it's interesting, sort of.
I don't think there's an answer we're going to come up with in this one-hour podcast. But I would like to implore, I guess, our listeners, you know, if this is you, take a breath, think about it, ask yourself what could go wrong and what will be the implications if it does go wrong. If you can, think through all that and still think it's safe to go ahead with your plan, okay, fine. Just accept the responsibility if it does go wrong. I guess that's all we can do.
I'd be interested to know whether these fellows that did the steel wool, if that was actually their first time, because it would seem to me that, most people I've seen that do it down the beach or somewhere like there.
Yeah, somewhere where you're not going to set everything on fire.
Yes. So I'm just wondering whether,
Yeah.
Interesting.
Definitely.
Anyway, I think we've done that to death now, so.
Absolutely, and we've completed our list.
Yes.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for coming back on to host.
Thank you.
It's all right. So
the master might be back, will he?
He flies back in pretty soon. I think it's next Wednesday. Right. So I don't know that he's going to be up for recording on Thursday night. I think he'll be a bit jet-lagged at that point. So I'll either take a week off next week or I'll round up somebody else to sit in the chair. So,
All right. Well, thanks, Bruce.
No worries, mate. And you take care.
Same to you.
And, we'll talk to you all again either next week or the week after.
Bye.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
Another AudioTeer.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.